This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Guys, I'd like to pre-apologize. You know how we're kind of freewheeling here in the High and Mighty studio? I did something messed up with the mics, and Seth's audio or my audio was a little off, so forgive me if the sound is a little weak on this, but trust me when I tell you, Mars from HeadGum is taking care of business and is correcting wrongs. What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuck boy, the number one fuck boy, the number one cuck boy. Joining me, as always, in the High and Mighty studios is my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give him a shout out. Alrighty, he even stops chewing the bone when the microphone gets close, so I can't get any audio from him. I'm your host, John Gabris, and joining me in the High and Mighty studios is first-time guest, long-time I want to say I've been a fan of you for a long time because I've been watching you since I think I first saw Trev and the Rev.
Oh yeah,
Seth Morris.
What's up, man? I'm psyched to be here. I think didn't I teach your intensive?
You
your summer intent?
You took over for Sheer in my level two, which would be 2004 because I took it right after I graduated.
Okay, but that was at the Chelsea Theater, right?
The rehearsals were at like a weird. They were like the Ripley. I didn't even know what they were called then because I was so new to the community. But it was one of those like, you may have.
Because I have this memory of you in the getting your picture taken after a student show with your mom or something.
Oh well, maybe
did
it was
you
my...
do an intensive ever?
I don't think so. No, but maybe it was my graduation show that maybe you would have been at because you took over the class.
Oh, maybe that must have been it.
Yeah, because you took over for Sheer.
That was it.
It was like right at the rise of like Sheer's Best Week Ever.
Yes,
thing. He had like one week in level two, he had an Entertainment Weekly reporter in there, and then the next week you were taking over. Yeah. I was like, oh my god,
yeah.
See you later, man.
Yeah, off and running. Yeah, it's been the same ever since. I've been three paces behind him ever since. Yeah, that's like when people started getting work, and we're like, holy shit.
We're like, is this like a viable business?
These people getting paid for stuff? Like, yeah, Hubel had a bunch of commercials.
The inappropriate cell phone guy, right? He popped first. Did he like pop first? Work-wise in your generation?
Those guys were around pretty simultaneously.
Yeah.
I remember Andy Daly was he got Mad TV. Andy Daly and Donna Furman
Fineglass.
Yeah. Got Mad TV, and that was holy shit.
Right, like, oh wow, what we're doing here is a possible career choice.
It's a real thing, yeah. And then, those guys started, Sheer and those guys started getting the talking head work and that kind of stuff.
Pally was like the first guy in our generation, like to be like, oh, what's, oh, you're going out for a Twix commercial?
Yeah, Snickers commercial.
Yeah. And then
right?
just like made a, like he was just everywhere for a while. The next thing you know, it's like, yeah, I'm in a movie. I'm like, a movie?
Yeah.
You can do that shit?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was only for, you know, British guys.
Exactly.
I didn't know you could be a shithead from like Long Island and New Jersey and in a film.
Yeah.
But I going back to was Trev and the Rev, the sketch show you and Husky did, was one of the bits pouring orange juice for like it's like that stands out. It was maybe the first scripted show I saw at the theater.
Oh,
like,
cool.
And I don't even think I knew it was scripted. It was one of those like you got to go to the theater and see shows. And I'm like, the time I can go this week is this.
Yeah.
And it was you guys and maybe like an old Lutz sketch show called like Peter Gwynn's The Confidence Ladder. One of those two like. And then it was you guys, and I was fucking losing.
The premise of the show is so stupid. So the first video that was ever on MTV was called Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles.
Yes.
And Husky, when he put on this one wig and glasses, he looked like the guy from the Buggles. So he's like, oh, we'll write a show about that. And so I was his pastor friend, and we were both like old. Yeah. And like these, he had had. We just created the story where that guy fame got to his head and he became a coke addict. And I was a coke addict with him. And then we pulled out of it. And now we're doing this Christian, you know, sort of like get your life together show. But then by the end of the show, we're doing coke.
I fucking loved it. It was like had a real Grey Gardens vibe.
Yes,
inside like two old, and I want to remember that the guys were kind of queenie, but that might be just because it's you and Husky.
Well, yeah, he was in drag too for the orange juice scene.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm remembering.
Yes. Oh, that's so funny, man.
Yeah, it's always a weird thing. Like my wife and I were talking about the other day. It's like when you watch someone on stage, like
we ran into Tatiana Maslany from Orphan Black at a concert.
Oh, yeah.
And Tiffany goes, oh, my God, I haven't seen you in forever. And she's like, I've never met you. And I'm like, Tiffany's like, oh, I'm so embarrassed. I'm Gabrus's husband. And it was like one of those things where you see someone enough and you think like, well, they know me as well as I know them.
Yes.
And then that creates like the Jodie Foster
serial
three name dudes catching the ride. But also creates like a fandom where you finally get to meet the person. You're like,
I know
too much about your comedy.
I'll do that, or I'll assume, because if I'm a fan of somebody and but they also know my friends, I jump ahead as if like I know them. Like, I know, we know the same people, and I jump into where I feel like I know them, and they're just like, I'm meeting you for the first time.
You forget, you're like, I know enough about you, you're friends with my friends, sounds like you're pretty cool.
Yeah.
Here's the deal.
Let's jump into it. And they're like, no, that's not how it works.
They're like, I don't even want to talk to your friends, you, the one guy I don't know.
I pretend to like those people, yeah.
I'm just networking, and you're not going to be able to help me.
And what was your sketch show? I saw the lifeguard thing.
Yeah, that was You're Out Too Far.
Yes.
That was like my first thing at the
theater.
That was
so funny.
Yeah.
And who?
That was me and Justin Tyler, who's still in New York, if you remember him. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He hosts that show, Gentrify, at UCB East. And that was literally from watching like three different two-person sketch shows. We were like, oh, we should just do the most insane. And we...
You guys brought it out here, right?
Yeah, we did
that's
it out here.
Okay, that's right, because I saw it in LA.
We did a whole bit where we were stuck out deep in the ocean and stuff kept popping up, and we used all helium inflated. We wrote ourselves into a corner where we came up with a bit that required filling up like 40 balloons with helium before every show. Yeah. And it's like, we never had our lines done because we had to handle all the... And we're like, what are we doing to
us? I feel like that was half the thing with sketch shows. It's like, let's commit so hard to a dumb thing that we create this... a ton of work for ourselves. Right. You know?
And we were doing like weekly like PA jobs more or less for our own show, where it's like, okay, the show's tonight. Can you pick up the milkshake, the cake, the the disposable blah blah blah. You know, grab the camera. Don't forget this. Bring your flip flops. You know, it's like all the shit we had to do just to put on a show for 100 people.
Yeah. Those shows are so fun, but I don't know if I would ever do that kind of work again on a regular. It's like you have to be in your 20s to do that.
You have to, because you have to also think that anything can happen.
By the way, Husky and I were in our late 30s when we did Trev and the Rep, but
you got to be in your early 20s or in your late 30s and really stretching it or pushing it hard. Like 5 years after we did that show, me and Justin, after we were like, you know, trying to write pilots, write movies, we were like, we got to do another sketch show. And we're like, all right, what do we want to do? It's like the one thing we wanted was no props.
Yeah.
And then so we start writing like no prop sketch show, and we're just two white guys who aren't even that good of actors or anything. We're like, oh shit. And then we just eventually, the show became so out of control with costume changes and shit. And we're like, let's just drop this.
It is so fun though. It's like, that shit is.
It really is. I know how, like, I never did any of this shit, but like, I know how like college theater kids get like geeky about, because like, you can really. We put on sketch shows in college. I was in a comedy group, and it would be like the week leading up to the sketch shows, we would have rehearsal every night for like 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And it was like a dream.
Yeah.
And it was like, I don't like, my friends are all partying, and I'm like, nah, dude, I got to get off book for the carnival guesser sketch.
Yeah.
And then
the door-to-door dildo salesman. Right. That's not just going to happen, bro. I have to work on it. Yeah.
The character is based on Mr. Leacock, you know, the professor, you know, like you think it has depth. And it's this is actually a reference to a Sequest episode. Like, what do you care?
Yeah.
We were going to talk about moving. Yes. We were going back and forth, and you have lived in a number of apartments.
I've moved a ridiculous number of times and lived in, a ton of interesting and or shady places.
That's one of the many drawbacks to our careers, when you're like, eventually I'll make enough money to live like a human, but in the meantime, I guess I'll have roommates in my 30s and shit.
Yeah.
Did you do it? Because especially New York and LA are the only two places, really.
Yeah. Well, I lived I lived in a lot of the other thing that I was going to. Sorry that you made me think of is that I liked living in these weird shitty places. You know, I would, when I look back, I'm like, oh, I kind of sought those out in a way. Like,
cause you're like a little bit of a hippie, a little bit crunchy guy.
Yeah.
You're if I remember from,
I'm from Northern California.
Yeah.
So some of them were just the typical, like, friend houses that stay in a friend group for
and like people
five,
rotate in and
6 years or whatever. And then some were just like, I've lived in three gentlemen's hotels, I call them, which are basically like single room occupant. You share a bathroom.
Oh, it's like a dorm, more or less.
Yeah, right. But with alcoholics and in their 50s and, you know.
And you were doing that like in your 20s?
Yeah, my 20s. I did it one. I did it up in Seattle in my 20s. I did it in Northern California in my 20s. And then I did it in New York in my 30s.
What were you doing around, going around?
I was just kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I took like, 6 years to get through junior college. Like, would go for a while and then I would travel and then I'd come back and then I'd travel and then I'd work for a while and then I'd come, and you know, not the whole time being like, I'm just in school just to learn. I don't care about anything. And then at a certain point I was like, fuck this, I want to move on.
And did you have a first thing that you wanted to do? Was it wasn't fitness or it wasn't like yoga oriented, or is that am I thinking of the dumbbells episode you did?
I always wanted to act, but I always wanted to act and always sort of knew that I would get into that eventually, but I wanted to do something else first. And in my, at my crunchiest, I was very, and I don't, it's going to sound like I'm embarrassed about this, but I'm not, but I was very into environmental stuff and I was going to be like an environmental scientist or something. So I was a geology major.
Okay.
And it's so funny when you do podcasts, if you realize, like, I tell the same stories like over and over again, but I
know that these mouth breathers that are listening aren't the same mouth breathers from a different podcast. Right. I tell the same stories weekly on a show I host. I get no repeat listeners.
Yeah, that's like good training for being a dad, or somebody's, your kid just going to roll their eyes. Yes. I've heard this story.
I always wonder, at what age do you just become so fucking boring? Like,
yeah.
When, like, the last time I saw my uncle, I was like, he's bringing up the same four stories you brought up the last time I saw him, and 3 years have passed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like,
but you know, it's like, if you keep having crazy, interesting stories, you're kind of fucked up. You know what I mean? It's like, at a certain point, you should settle down and just remember stuff other than, like, I was so fucked up, I couldn't remember anything.
You know? Right. You kind of want your 55-year-old uncle's, like, stories to be like, yeah, the kids are doing well, work's crazy. You don't need him to have, like, really new ideas.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
I didn't even think of that.
But we
were, you were saying,
I was a geology major, and then at a certain point I was like, fuck this, I'm just gonna act. Let's just get through school and go, I want to get to New York.
Yeah. That's a very mature, and something I wish I would have done, was like, all right, I know I'm gonna get into comedy and get into acting. And I started right after college at 22, and I'm 36 and still haven't really gotten into acting.
Right.
So I definitely could have spent 5 years doing whatever I wanted and started at 27 and have like just one more layer of life experience that isn't.
I'm sort of glad. I mean, I have regrets that I didn't start earlier sometimes, you know, because it felt like when I got to UCB, it feels ancient. Like, I was 28, but that is very young.
Yeah.
But I am glad that I had
it's a young person's game.
Totally.
The 11 p.m. shows and the drinking till 4 in the
exactly.
morning.
Yeah, exactly.
But you can do it well into your 30s.
Fuck yeah.
Trust me.
Big time. Oh, my God. Yeah, I was hanging out. My fiance is 11 years younger than me, and we were talking with some of her friends, and she was sort of saying, like, oh, you used to one guy. You used to party hard. He's like, yeah, that was my younger days or something. You know, you have to taper off. And he's like 36 now. And he's like, Seth, when did you taper off? Because he said, like, he stopped when he was, you know, stopped really hitting it hard when he was like 29 or 30 or something. He's like, when did you go till? I was like, oh, I guess I went till I was about 38.
Right, because this job just allows it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's just delayed adolescence. Yeah.
Also, being 8 years older than someone, but like hanging out, or 8 years younger than someone and hanging out, and that is not apparent at all.
Yeah.
Like, with the exception of hairlines amongst the, amongst women, even less.
Yeah.
With the exception of hairlines amongst the UCB community, you had, like, I would be talking and it'd be like me, Dominic Durkis, and Kevin Hines. Yeah. And we're like 6 years apart in each direction, and it doesn't even register.
It's all the same.
Yeah.
Thing.
You're all the same. You're all on stage. You're all equal. And you get off, you get shit faced together.
Totally. Well, that yeah, that makes me think of two things. One is it's a different game in New York too, because it's like, you know, fucking bar stay up until four. So it's everybody's operating in a
You can get
level.
Out of a show that ends at after midnight and still have a full night of partying ahead of you.
Yeah, totally. And in those days where you're just, you could do the math and you're like, okay, I can sleep for 3 hours. And then I only have to be really aware for like 3 hours at a time. You know, like,
yeah.
I'll sleep till 10. I'm going to party, close the bar at four. I'll sleep till 10. And then I have to be aware for like 2 hours and then I can go take a nap.
Right. Exactly. It's like, all I got to do is go to house by 11:30 to do some bullshit commercial audition.
Yeah.
Then I can be back in bed in my outer borough apartment at one, just riding the train in just to go like, hey, my favorite cheesy bite is the ranch one, and then you just get back on the train completely hungover and all the way.
Fuck, I hit cheesy too hard. I should have said cheesy bite is the best. Yeah,
fuck, man, Gimmerling's gonna get that my entire life. My first apartment, I met the dudes in level two. They moved from Colorado to New York. I was dating my now wife at the time, and all I knew, and I wasn't positive if she was informed of this, is that I assumed we were going to be together, so I wanted to have one non-wife roommate situation, because I was living with my mom and working in the city, because I lived outside the city, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get an apartment. I know my wife, my then girlfriend, can't afford to get an apartment just yet, so I'm going to be like, I'm going to push the pace so I can have 1 year before we move in together. And my first apartment was two guys from my level two, sort of like the first guys that said, yeah, we're looking at, hey, I'm like, hey, you want to get a three bedroom? We're in the 3-on-3 Thanksgiving tournament together. Yeah. We might as well move in. I moved in with these guys into a loft in Williamsburg at South 4th and Bedford. This is like 04. My bedroom, the ceilings were 5 feet high. You had to go up a ladder, and then I could only like dive into my bed, which was a mattress on the floor.
Yeah.
In my room, I had a bar where I hung my clothes, shelves where my laptop was, and I lived in a treehouse.
Yeah. See, I love that. That's the kind of thing where like my crunchiness came in, because I was like, that's neat. I love that kind. I lived
right.
It was my first place I lived in New York was on 4th and 2nd.
Oh,
and
awesome.
It was a two-bedroom apartment, and two of my friends already lived there, and I slept on this little pull-out love seat. It wasn't even full couch, and
in the living room, more
in
or less?
The living room, my dresser was an old filing cabinet, so I kept my clothes in this filing cabinet, and I was like, I feel like a private eye, like I live in this, and there was a hole in the ceiling that we had jerry-rigged because it would leak, so we jerry-rigged like a tinfoil turkey pan type of thing that would drain into the fucking air duct. But I was just like, I love that kind of stuff. Like, I love camping. Like, oh, you can set up a tent. I lived in a van for a while. I had
You lived
bus.
In a van?
Yeah.
And what city was this in?
This was in California. This is in Northern California. Yeah.
And what, solo or is it like?
Solo. I had another year of school left, and I didn't have anywhere to live for the summer. And so I got a scholarship for like $8,000. I applied for some scholarship. And I took $1,500 of those dollars and bought this shitty 68 pop-up. Actually, it was pretty cool, but the engine wasn't great. Pop-up VW bus. And so I lived in that van for that summer. And
dude, the mindset of a young person to be like, shit, man, I have no place for the summer. So I could just get like a nice van.
Yeah.
I would be set. Like, I know I've thought this shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's just insane to have actually done.
Yeah,
that's
Yeah. But I love like RVs and, you know, tree houses and all that kind of like alternative living. Now I'd rather do it on a better scale, obviously. But
yeah, now I'd rather live in a mansion and then every weekend go to a yurt or something.
Exactly,
like that.
Exactly. But I'm a sucker for that. Like, ooh, alternative living. That's kind of neat.
I was always sort of into that too, and I think it just like stemmed from like having a normal-ish like grow up in the suburbs and then go to college and live in dorms. And I'm like, the idea of like living in a lot. And then I got into like the sort of hardships of city living as like a badge of pride, as like every New Yorker makes.
You romanticize it. Yeah. One of my gentlemen's hotels in New York was on 3rd and 12th, right where that Keels is.
Yeah.
Now there's NYU housing or something there, but it was this, you know, real shitty, it was a 7 by 15 foot room with a sink. And then you, there were, I think there was three floors. There was maybe four apartments per floor, and you shared a bathroom. And but when I first saw it,
there's like a bathroom on each floor.
There's a bathroom on each floor. Totally gross, you know, with like graffiti on the wall, like number seven is a junkie whore, you know. And you know, you wear,
come see Trev and the Rev Thursday at 9:30.
Leave flyers out. Yeah, exactly. But I got, it was like, it was so, you know, like there's a bar downstairs and deli on the side. And it just, for the first, I lived there for about a year. And I wish I could say it was fun for 2 weeks and then I got over it and got scared. It was fun for like 8 months. You know, I was like, this is fucking cool. I'm right here in the city. And because I had been living out in, way the fuck out somewhere in Brooklyn, near the Greenwood Cemetery or something like that. And when that place ended, I was like, fuck it. I just want to live close to the theater. So I had a friend, who was involved with theater, but he was one of those guys who wasn't, he did like tech and did music stuff. He wasn't ever going to be a improviser really.
Yeah.
But he lived at this place. And I just thought it was cool, weird. It felt like being a Tom Waits video. So I was like, oh,
yeah. And there's cool. And there's like an element of like adulthood to be like, because it's really not easy to live alone in New York City financially.
Yeah.
Like when you're like an artist of some capacity. But if you can get that, could not have been that expensive of a place, right?
It was more expensive than it should have been. It was like $600, $650.
Yeah. That's like, I remember being like looking for an apartment and being like, I can't afford more than $600 a month.
Yeah.
Which is an insane thing to think about.
But it was cool. And I liked it for a while. But then after a while, you realize like, oh, I'm slumming, quote unquote, because I have some other options and means. But everybody else there was like, this is not a novelty for them.
Right. You know, and then you feel like weirdly like an upper middle class, like you feel like a third world visitor.
Exactly.
Sort of like
exactly.
When you go to Vietnam and you're like, look at all these people.
I mean, I was broke. It got to a point where I couldn't afford to leave. I just didn't have the money to put down a deposit anywhere else. And I felt trapped there. But, you know, there was like a prostitute that lived there. Everybody had some weird thing going on, but it still did feel like, I felt like I was in some Henry Miller short story or something.
Oh yeah. No, it's certainly like a premise to a fucking long play.
Yeah.
Did you have any friends in that? Like, was there one person that you were like,
I had the friend that I already had that was living
in a different apartment.
He eventually moved from this smaller apartment to like a bigger, he still didn't have his own bathroom or anything, but it was like a bigger place. But no, I became friendly with like this thuggy dude that lived next door who, he had cats, so he was nice to me because I had a cat.
The bonds.
Yeah, exactly.
Bonds over animals.
Yeah, but he was kind of a dirtbag. I mean, he was like a sweet dirtbag, you know? So I ended up like, you know, after you do your time in New York and people get like these good apartments. I had a pretty good apartment on just down the street from the Gentleman's Hotel that was on 12th and First, right by WoHop used to be there some of those places. And it was a two bedroom apartment in a five story walk up, but it was right next door to a laundromat and it was right by the subway. It was paradise, like good roof access. And that ended up being I lived there with my friend that I had known since high school. And then eventually Katie Dippold lived with me. And then I moved out and Katie...
Is this the legendary small apartment?
It might be.
Then Matt Moses eventually lived there with Dippold. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was one of the two bedrooms like so small, like cartoonishly
small?
Itty
bitty, yes.
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 This is the legendary tiny apartment.
Yes.
Eventually, I believe Jess Cantrell would get that apartment and then sell a Comedy Central pilot called Tiny Apartment.
No shit.
Yes. I believe so. Cause I heard about that apartment. I became friends with Dippold later, but Moses took over and was living with Dippold, and Moses would talk about where he would enter the door to his bedroom and sort of either sit on the bed or stand next. There was nothing to do but just get on the bed.
Totally. He had that was my bedroom for most of the time. And eventually when my roommate moved
And you're
back.
Like 6'5".
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Your feet are in
but
the
But even
hallway.
That, I was like, I feel like I'm in the cabin of a boat. Like, I feel like I'm in a train or something. So I would romanticize it.
You know? Small never mattered.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have anything.
Yeah, New York is like... You're just always out and you're always, you know,
right. Yeah.
You come to your apartment to take a shit and
you
sleep,
pretty much really. Have a van,
you have
a van that happens to be a fifth floor walk up van.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You eventually get a good New York apartment the longer you live there. Cause you just keep making more and more friends. And then eventually someone's like, hey, this great apartment I have is, or a friend of a friend. Like that's the only way to find an apartment in Los Angeles, in New York. I mean, I guess anywhere really.
Yeah.
But in New York, you have to be like,
Especially brutal in New York where when people get that apartment, everybody's like, oh, I'm jealous, but also I know what you went through. I'm happy for you.
You like have to plant a flag, just get an apartment to get yourself in the city. And you're like, oh, this is a neighborhood no one wants to live in.
Is this the only spot you've lived in LA?
Yes.
Oh,
and that's
cool.
Moving with a wife who is like an interior person, like a decorator, you get like, you sort of like when we moved to Brooklyn, me, her, and a friend, we did the classic, like, two guys, a girl, and a pizza place. And that was the best. That was an amazing apartment in Red Hook, Carroll Gardens area with, you know, we're splitting a two-bedroom apartment rent three ways.
Yeah.
But one guy has one. So I think I was paying like $600. Me and my wife were paying like $600 each a month to have like this beautiful apartment with roof access.
Yeah.
And then he moved out and we were like, let's just buckle down, save some money, and pay his share.
Yeah, I
truly, even amongst my friends, and really, we were still not even paying $2,000.
Yeah.
And it was like, I felt like my friends would come over and be like, what's this room? I'd be like, this is my office. They're like, you have an office? And I'm like, yeah, dude. And then because it's my wife, because Tiff decorates so much, it's like, I all of a sudden lived in a home. And then I like, it was like, we're never leaving this place.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though I hated the walk up and we were like a half mile from the train and shit. So then when we moved to LA, we were like, oh, we'll just find a place again, plant our flag. And then we found this place. And then Tiffany eventually turned this into like a full blown home.
Yeah.
And now I haven't lived anywhere else. And now I can't afford to live anywhere else.
Yeah.
Because I got in here 6 years ago and the rent has not been moving up too much.
Oh, that's great. My first place in LA was a little bit further, right on, Hayworth and Beverly.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Right near the Grove and stuff. And that was a great apartment. It was fucking awesome, except we had these horrible neighbors. I lived there with Donna again. She was my first. And I just took it sight unseen and I put the word out like, hey, I'm moving out to LA. Does anybody have a place? And she's like, oh, my roommate's moving out. You can come in here. And it was a nice, beautiful two-bedroom. One of those like LA apartments that has like the pink and turquoise tile. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like carpet in the bedroom and like...
No carpet in the bedroom.
Oh,
wood floors.
Yeah.
But like there's these certain apartments that must have all been built around in the 40s or 50s because I've seen them around
They're
this
all
side of
over.
Town.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I moved in there. Then she moved in with her now husband. And then I had a whole like UCB crew. Like Manzoukas would come out for pilot season. Lennon Parham lived with me for a while. Jessica St. Clair lived with us for a little while. Jackie Clark lived there. Gene Villapique.
Because you just had like an extra room out, everyone knew about. And
which was
just
great. And that felt great because then I was the guy that had like, hey, I have this place. And if anybody's out here for pilot season, you can come. And eventually.
So were you living there alone with like sort of like filling in months?
Yeah.
Rent? Oh, that's.
Yeah, it was great.
That's
it
fucking,
was fucking
cool.
Great. And I fixed the place up because it was nice, but nobody had done anything. And I stripped the fireplace and it had this exposed wood and painted the bricks and it was beautiful. But we had these insane downstairs neighbors and insane owners who lived in the building next door. And the owners next door, this woman, her boyfriend had he was this crazy Greek dude who fed all these feral cats. So there's like 15 fucking cats that would be out and they would like piss in the hood of my car. So I'd turn on the heat and be like, oh, gross. Oh, cat piss. And I was like, I'm going to say something to that guy. And Donna would be like, oh, he's pretty crazy. I don't know if you want to do that. Somebody called the animal people or whatever to get these cats because they just keep fucking breeding cats. And these cats were sickly. They were not well taken care of. But that guy found out and slashed their tires.
Jesus.
And then another time, somebody, I don't know what it was about the cats, but one of his neighbors pissed him off. So he set up a hibachi outside of their door to try to smoke them out of their fucking
Jesus
building.
Christ.
It also made me realize, like, oh, cities are cities, because these are weirdos that could have existed in New York. I feel like sometimes living in New York, you feel like, oh, that only true city weirdos are in New York. You know, those people who live in Manhattan, but they've never left their neighborhood. So they're like, what's the internet? Or what's, you know?
They're like, I live in the most expensive city in America in some weird way where I pay $400 a month
for a
studio on the Lower East Side, and I've never gone further than four blocks away.
Exactly. The people that live downstairs from us, I could never figure out what was going on, because there'd be all these guys kind of coming in and out. I was like, how many fucking people live in that apartment? And what I found out is that it's...
He was hosting a podcast. So many white guys in cargo shorts coming in and out.
What I found out is that it somehow at a certain point it had qualified for like subsidized housing for people with some kind of disabilities or people down on their luck, right? So somehow it was like a halfway house kind of a situation. And the way that I figured it out is we had a bunch of fucking roaches that kept coming into our apartment. And eventually we realized, oh, it's coming from that apartment downstairs. So the roach guy came and he's like, oh, I need to get into that apartment downstairs to fumigate there. And da, da, da. And I went down there with him and I go into this apartment and it was the same footprint as mine, a two-bedroom apartment, but they had all these like plywood walls set up so that seven grown men lived there. There was a payphone in there.
Oh.
And I came up, I was just like, holy, it was like walking through a mirror. We were like, I didn't know this world was here.
Yeah, and it's feet away from you.
Yeah. And then the guy was like, okay, I'm going to go work on the thing. And he came back up to my apartment and he was like all sweaty and he goes, whew. And I goes, is it pretty bad down there? He's like, whew. I'm not supposed to tell you this, but he goes, I haven't seen roaches that bad since the 80s.
Holy like, shit.
What the fuck does that mean?
It's disgusting how frequently I forget to brush my teeth. I hated it as a kid, and now as an adult, I'm trying. I'm learning. And one of the things that's helped me is getting cool toothbrushes. Like Quip, man. It's an electric toothbrush that isn't big, isn't expensive. It's super easy to use. It has a built-in timer. It's got a subscription plan. So they just send you new brush heads as you need it and new toothpaste. So that's just like one thing off the list of stuff you have to buy. Not to mention, they look cool as hell. Completely waterproof. At least I believe so. That's not in the copy because I keep mine in the shower because I like to brush my teeth in the shower because then you can go, rah, mad dog like Pee Wee Herman and spit foam and stuff everywhere like that. Guys, I'm enjoying the Quip brush. It looks cool. I got one as a travel brush. I got one in my shower. I want as many Quip toothbrushes as I can carry. Please give them all to me. Well, why don't you guys get them yourself? So here's how it works. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/mighty right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/mighty. Spelled GETQUIP.com/mighty. Brush dem teeths.
So the first, we live on a, as you can tell, a downstairs apartment. When we first moved here, our upstairs neighbors were an uncle and a nephew. Already a vibe bad that I can't news. Really wrap my head around. They were like, they would go out and party together. They were like shit-faced all the time. And they had the exact same layout as, and they would make noises that were like, someone fell. Someone fell off of a dresser and is hurt. And it would be so loud. One night they were being so, I remember it because it was like, I think it was the night before my birthday. And I was like having a party, but like the night before, me and my wife were like, Let's have like a little party at home for just the two of us where we get some wine, smoke some weed, watch, you know, pick a movie that we've been dying to watch, whatever. And then all of a sudden we just hear like the loud racket and we're like, the neighbors are up to it again. And then we hear glass smash and we're like, what the fuck was that? So then like later on, we were like just talking about how crazy that must have been. Then we take Arthur out to go and the room above here where it has this big plate glass window here is completely shattered. It's like in the shrubs and stuff like that. We find out the guy tripped going into his room and fucking went through his window. He was fine. He smashed a fucking plate glass window and like the neighbor and we never had problems with them. They were just like loud. Then the next like four people that come through, the story's going to be way longer than I want to. The next four people that come through are like nice little couples and, you know, a mom and then like two girlfriends, two guy friends. Then eventually a mom and a daughter move in and we're like, oh, perfect. Oh, great no. Upstairs neighbors. Their mom. And then shit fucking went crazy. Oh. Like it all of a sudden, like they were constantly leaving their laundry in the laundry room, which is like enough to get the ire of your nine.
Of course.
10 units, one washer. Their shit's always in there. And Tiffany's like, my wife's like, it always smells like piss. I'm like, you're smelling their laundry? She's like, I have to know. And then we start getting little baby cockroaches. And Tiff used to work for an exterminator. That was like her high school job as like a receptionist. And baby roaches are the worst because that means there's nests. Like one big roach is a safe thing to see.
Right.
Like that could be just a passerby.
Right, right.
But a baby means they're being born right. nearby. So we have like baby roaches crawling out of our sink drain.
Oh.
Some shit going on where like we have the exterminator come out. Tiff's like instantly like, no, this is bad. Send the exterminator comes. Fucking blasts everything. They're like, yeah, we'll see what. And then like 3 months later, we get like some more and we're like, it's got to be them upstairs. Yeah. They're dirty. They're and like we're like we can't stereotype. Roaches don't only happen to dirty people. The exterminator comes again. I want to just tell you. I want to stereotype her because she was the most badass, like hot, short haired lesbian exterminator. Like I never seen a woman that I was like, yes, yes, ma'am. Like
John Goodman.
Yeah, it was like that, but like a beautiful woman who was like, oh fuck, hey, like literally flirting with my wife in front of me, like alpha-ing me, hey, what's up, baby? You know? And I'm like, fine. and she's like, yeah. And the only reason this all triggered is because you said, she's like, I'm not supposed to tell you guys. Because I guess there's some rule, like don't blow up someone's spot if they're having exterminate. And she's like, they had three full-blown roach nests in their apartment. One in their bathroom, like in behind the walls, they wouldn't have known. One in their modem.
Ew.
Like, because apparently they get attracted to warmth. So it's like buried under the modem and the wires, like behind their TV. And then the third was behind their fridge, in their fridge.
Ew.
They had three infestations. She was like, they had to move out for like 2 days. They bombed the fuck out of their place. And then like, it all died down. We were like, just these people are gross. We have like, we wrote like, we have fan fiction about them that goes for like hours where we're like, she was an alcoholic because she had to get rid of her car at one point and start Ubering. We're like, we had it all solved. But the kicker to the story is landlord sends an email. It's like, don't forget it's daylight savings. Change your smoke alarm batteries. I take my smoke alarm off, go to take my smoke alarm off the wall to change the battery. And 50 roaches come crawling out all over my arm and shit. And I just, it was Temple of Doom. Temple of Doom. I've never been that scared. Like the noise I made, I'm like half stoned going, I'll switch the batteries. And all of a sudden they're all over my arm. I'm like, spraying rain, make the fucking exterminator come right back and just bomb everyone. Yeah. Lived in New York City for 10 years, 8 years, had like those mega fucking like pigeon-sized roaches once in a while in my Brooklyn apartment. Never bed bugs, never that.
Yeah.
Moved to beautiful, sunny, classy LA and I have fucking roaches.
You know what else the exterminator guy told me, LA trivia, he said, yeah, you know the palm trees are full of rats. That's where the fucking rats live.
Oh, like the tree rats, right?
Yeah.
Oh, they're just...
Isn't that the perfect metaphor for LA? Like these...
the beautiful... And they're imported here too. So it's like we're bringing homes for rats into our city.
That's why sometimes you'll see metal bands around the palm trees.
Because that stops them from being able to scurry up there. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
If you ever see one of those rats, it's terrifying.
Oh,
New York City rats were always just like, hey, it's the fucking city, bro. But when you see like a big one crawling across the bushes in LA,
that's
you're like,
eating organic, you know, food. I lived it. So one
it's,
of the
it's
other.
It's like powered by avocados. Yeah. It's like good fat. It's like brawling.
I lived in this one place in Marin that I lived there. It was like a one bedroom. We lived there with four people.
Oh.
One girl lived in the closet. I slept on the couch. My friend slept on the in the living room, had a, like a partition, but we lived, it was kind of, it was not in the woods, but it was near a creek. It was like a residential area, nice area. But because it was near a creek, this fucking huge ass rat, like it must've been like 8 inches long. I mean, this fucking rat was
like off the ground, high,
off the ground.
Like a dog. Like
yeah. And my friend was dating this Portuguese girl who her English wasn't that good. So we would set these rat traps, and every once in a while we'd see, like one time I woke up, I was on the couch and my friend's like, God damn it. And this boot goes flying across because he's like throwing his boot at the rat that's like so fat that it's like.
You gotta like just scare it away for a couple of hours.
For
like,
a second.
Yeah.
But one morning his girlfriend woke up because the rat was fucking on her head.
Oh my God.
And she screams. She's like, ah, everybody wakes up and she doesn't know how to say rat. She's like, the big mouse was in my head. and then eventually, ooh man, we caught it with a rat trap and I had to like take the dead weight of this fucking
feeling how heavy
mega rat. Oh, it was so disgusting.
Oh shit. We had a bunch of little mice in our Brooklyn apartment and they were like legit cute, but you would then like find your Cinnamon Toast Crunch box chewed through and you're like, okay, they
you
gotta
have to
go.
Die. Yeah.
But my wife Tiff went full like harmless traps, all that. I'm like, no, babe, we just gotta kill a couple.
Yeah.
Send a message. She said, no, catch and release traps. So we start putting out a catch and release trap with like peanut butter in it. And every morning there's like three little mice in it. And she walks down to a local park and lets them out. And I'm like, babe, they are coming right back to this house because they know they won't get killed here. And she's like, I refuse. I'm like, all right, I'll play along with this charade. One time we don't have peanut butter, so she puts honey in the trap. And when she puts honey in the trap, she wakes up in the morning, three or four little mice in there, brings it to the park. They can't, they're stuck to the honey
in
the thing.
Now,
I'm asleep because she's working and I was at McManus
You're
till 4
artist,
in the morning
yeah.
drinking pints of Jameson and ginger ale, as an artist does. And my phone rings, wakes me up. I'm like, Mom, what's the matter? And she's hysterical crying. She's like, they're stuck to the thing. You got to bring me hot water. So I'm
waking.
I like bringing a bucket of hot water to the local park. My wife is there fully dressed for work, hysterical crying. She's like, they're stuck. They're going to die. And I was like, oh, they're like pouring warm water on them to like loosen the honey up. And they eventually like wash out and one is like not moving. And she's like, I'm like, oh, he's playing dead. Like, let's go. Like, I was like, let's get the fuck out of here. I'm like, go to work.
Yeah.
And I was like, we can't ever talk about
that. Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
You before talking about the Portuguese woman, one person living in the closet, one person sleeping on the couch. That must be so weird for some people to hear.
Yeah.
But like, I remember when that weird loft I lived in Brooklyn, we were paying $700 a month. One person lived in a lofted bed. Two of us lived in tree houses, more or less. And then one of them was like, yeah, my friend just got a copywriting job in New York. He has a family in Boston. He doesn't want to spend a lot of money. I told him he can have our couch for $400 a month. And we were like, we're complaining so much about how small our place is and how little room we have. It's like, hey, a 35-year-old man wants to live on the couch for a couple of months. We were like, yes.
$400.
All our rent goes down $100. Yeah. And all of a sudden you're like, I have $100 a month. Yeah. Fucking, you feel like a king.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't even give a shit that I wake up every morning and see a guy I'm not friends with asleep on the couch.
Oh, the shit you put up with. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
One of my roommates in that apartment, a dude named Nacho, left the stove on 3 times in a row. He used to come home like kind of drunk from the bar he bartended at, drink all my beer that was in the fridge, leave me a note that said, sorry, I drank all the beer. The next morning, he would run out, get me more beer, put it in the fridge with a note that said, sorry, I finished your beer last night. And then that night we'd get drunk and drink the beer. He was like, this
dude. What's Nacho doing now? Do you know?
Nacho is a teacher in Colorado, wife and kids. Like,
oh, nice.
Classic, like,
yeah,
just super. I lived with two like hippies, you know, like he kept like coconut shards in like a glass of water on his nightstand. Then I don't know what that was for.
Oh, that's funny.
Roommates, I had a roommate one time say, I don't want to chip in for toilet paper because I mostly shit at work. If that's not like the worst, wow. Like, is that a bad sign?
Yeah.
Splitting money amongst artists in their 20s living in shit situations is a real problem.
Yeah, man. It's tough. It's tough. It's such a crapshoot. I mean, I've been pretty lucky with the roommate situation because you know, you hear these horror stories about people just find roommates through the Craigslist or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're just stuck with a stranger.
It's such a thing that has to happen. Yeah. And it's so hot. Like, it's easily the beginning to a horror movie, a porno, a mystery thriller, a murder mystery. Like, any movies like where you're like two strangers are now living in a small place together.
Yeah.
And not knowing anything about someone. Like, and then you hear them one time like talk to like their mom on the phone or like a girlfriend and you're like, oh God.
Yeah.
That's how he talks to her. Where
you just hear crying in the bedroom. You're like, ooh, what the hell's going on?
This is way smaller because it's college, but my first college roommate was a dude named Elvis Hernandez from the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
And he slept with no pillow and no blanket, just a sheet pulled up over his head on a flat mattress. It was the most haunting image of my life. Just coming into and he's like a sarcophagus. And we got along he was so weird. We got along so well. He moved out and then I had a single freshman year. And then sophomore year, a transfer moved into my room and he's like on the phone, like one of the first days he's there. And he's like, what do you mean I can't get a new computer? He's like talking to his mom. And he's like, what do you mean? I need a new computer for school. And like, what do you mean? And then he hangs up the phone and he smashes the receiver and goes, bitch, 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 bitch. Then takes his keyboard and smashes it against the desk a few times. He's like 5'6", 105 pounds, smashing it. And he sits down and he's like, bitch won't get me a computer. And this is like day three of meeting him. And wow. I was like, I got to get the fuck out of this. But then we stole all his Adderall. Just to prove that he wasn't the only asshole living in that room. Right. I took all his
it's
Adderall.
College. Yeah.
And one time he walked in on me fucking my girlfriend and didn't back out, say I was sorry or anything. Just like powered through.
Really?
And we were clearly fucking. And then we stopped and kind of just got under the blanket. And then he just like went to his computer and started working.
What a creep.
And then we had to like get fully dressed under the blanket and be like, okay.
Whoa.
Now I can't come unless someone walks in.
Yeah, exactly.
He has no idea what he fucked me up for life. I'm sorry.
Oh, dude.
What's your living situation now? Living with
now
the fiance?
We rent a house in Silver Lake, and I feel like it's
a god. Right?
Yeah. We have a yard so the dog can go out and poop, which is amazing. There's still some things like we only have one bathroom. We don't have AC, central AC, which are things that I was going to hold out for, but then the time, you know, like when you're looking and there's a clock ticking. You're like, but you know what's interesting? I love where we live, but we only use a quarter of it, you know, like there's this extra kind of sunroom that I only use sometimes. And the yard I go into sometimes, mostly the dog, like I could totally function in the equivalent of, you know, in a
New York City apartment.
Yeah. Like you don't need that much space, but it is nice to have it. The other thing that's nice is we have a garage and we can store shit in there, you know,
dude. That's something all LA apartments have over New York. Like we have like random cabinets in the hallway that can just hold shit.
Oh yeah.
This room has a closet. That room, we had no closets in our Brooklyn apartment, you know? And now it's like, oh shit.
Oh, I lived in New York for 9 years. I've been in LA for like 12 or 13 and I still have that physical sigh of relief at how much space I have. Like when I'm in the bath, I don't knock shit over when I'm in the bathroom. Like it was a given that no matter where I lived in New York, that I was going to knock stuff over in tiny little bathroom.
I could only imagine your plight as someone who's taller and lanky. The New York City showers, they're always just like hot water right at my chest level. Yeah. Like I have to like get in the full school. And then I'm also so broad that I can't shower without my shoulder touching the wall and the curtain or like I'm like in sideways. It's like, it's a fucking disaster.
It's just a given that I'm going to have to take a shit sitting sideways and my face is going to be in the sink. And you know,
that happened. Where was the Airbnb where I couldn't, I couldn't fit in, like get into the toilet because it was in such a narrow edge at my size. So the best I could do was I had to screw the toilet paper thing out of the wall so that because it was like taking up valuable thigh real estate. And then I kind of tucked myself into the cubby exhaled so that my shoulders and like my shoulders kind of just held me in place, and I was like 5 inches above the toilet.
Oh, God.
And I just shit from like
man.
And no other choice.
Dude. Did you watch that Andre the Giant documentary?
Yes, dude.
About him taking 14-hour trips to Japan, and he couldn't use the bathroom.
They would like he would piss in a bucket, yeah. And they would pour it in the toilet.
Ugh.
Oh my God, that's like degrading.
That's
Adam.
Degrading.
Yeah,
that's
like you, how do you not feel like an animal? And yeah, that you're like the most basic thing you want to do is like eight people have to get involved to help you. Yeah,
yeah. You guys, after watching that? my fiance and I were just like obsessed. Was like, how big was his dick? Like, was it proportional?
That's all we cared
about. It had to be. Right?
I love that moment in the doc when they're like, "What? How big is his?" Like, they're kind of alluding that he must have had a big hog. And then Ric Flair goes, "All I gotta say, brother, is I seen it, and the man has a size 32 boot." And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
There was a rumor of a dude in our high school called Schlong. They called him Schlong Kong because he had a big dick. And when he played lacrosse, he used to ace bandage it to his thigh so that it wouldn't.
It was
like,
that big?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, my God.
And one time he clipped it between two weights doing like dumbbell raises, and they like clinked, and he like his dick got all swollen, and like he had to go to the hospital. This is all the rumor of this kid we called Schlong Kong.
Wow. Wow.
God, I wish I had that nickname,
right?
Instead of Gay Bruce. This has been a real
dude,
pleasure,
so fun.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you have anything you want to plug? Do you have
nothing. If you haven't watched Love yet, watch Love.
Oh,
on
yeah,
Netflix.
Yeah.
I've got
It's fun to see you play a prick.
Oh, thank you.
Because you're so often like the kind like weirdo
weird hippie
guy.
Dude, yeah.
But to see you play a prick is you do it
joy.
So well. I
thank
mean, I watched
you.
It in improv forever, but seeing it on Love when you're just thank like you. An absolute asshole. So.
Yeah, I guess that's about it. And if you're in LA on Wednesdays, check out the Facebook show 9:30 at UCB
very funny
South
show.
Franklin.
And your Twitter is at Seth is Morris.
Seth is Morris. Yeah.
Yeah. So if anyone wants the other thing we do on that podcast, if anyone wants to tweet at us your insane living situations that you've had, please tweet at Seth is Morris and at Gabrus and let us know what kind of weird ass apartments. And also if you're renting a house that has a yard and a laundry machine anywhere
for
in
like $1,500 a month,
let me know. I just want like a super wealthy friend who has like five houses who just needs someone to more or less watch it and keep the mortgage alive.
That just happened to a friend of mine.
I have a friend who's in a situation like that.
God
too,
bless him.
Where they're like, yeah, our friend owns two homes. He got married. He moved into another house and he just like wants us to pay the mortgage and keep the house running. I'm
that's
like,
so great.
Oh, my dream.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to know that those are out there.
Yeah. Someday.
Yeah.
Well, Seth, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Please. And I'm at Gabrus on all social media. Listen to the Action Boys podcast on Patreon. Listen to Raised by TV on Earwolf. And yeah, that's all. Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.